Hello, and thank you for joining us. My name is Eric, aka Form Trends, and I'm joined with my colleague, Martin.
Hello, hello, everybody. How are things, Eric?
Yeah, very well, actually. Very well. Spring is in the air, and I'm really loving it here in London. It's been kind of sunny the last few days and warm, so I'm really looking forward to getting outside a bit this weekend. Hopefully, the weather will hold out for that.
I can say Munich has not been that nice over the past few days. We had a little bit of a drizzly snow time. So, I have been quite well prepared, or I had the capabilities to prepare myself quite a bit for this podcast. So, I hope that we can give some good infos out, or, some good insights. And yeah, let's crack on.
All right. Well, first of all, we should cover the new cars that have been unveiled since we left Geneva, which was our last podcast. Basically, there's been a few new additions, I think it's one of the biggest ones, that everybody's been talking about, but that wasn't really a great hit, I think, in the design community, is the Tesla Model Y.
Agree, and obviously, it doesn't come as a surprise that Tesla has not shown the Model Y in Geneva. They've, as always, have done it on their own little event theme, and it was presented by Elon Musk directly. And it just looks pretty much like a Model 3, a little bit higher, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a bad looking car, but it's not going to rewrite any design books. It's not very adventurous, for a little SUV, but yeah, very much like the Model 3 in its overall demeanor, so therefore very familial.
Yeah, I think where it does lack a little bit, and this is a little bit from my personal taste, if you look into the rear three-quarter view, it does look a little bit, kind of, I don't want to say Chinese, but there's something missing from that side. I think the Model 3 was much better resolved, and you have a little bit of the feeling that either, they were developed at the same time, or, for whatever reason, they didn't have that much time to really put into that Model Y. But especially after they presented that semi-truck, and also after they presented the Roadster, I was hoping for something a little bit more, more a little bit like an evolution in that sense, especially when they, finished their sexy term with the Model Y now. But it also makes a lot of sense, of course, in terms of the platforming. They are really going into volume now, and changing rather only a few things on a platform, and keeping it very, very close to the Model 3, I think helps them to kind of increase those production values. But in terms of the design, I a lot of people consider Tesla as quite conservative, not daring enough, and all these kind of things. And those people will be once again, confirmed with a design like that. So I think, the next generation Tesla is going to be really interesting, and to find out where they are moving maybe in the future. But this does not give us any indication what's yet to come from Tesla, or what's the next kind of level. This is purely another volume car that they're doing, and from a design perspective, I think quite disappointing.
Yeah, they're selling, right? I mean, they are appealing to people that are more interested in the tech than the design, or maybe they just don't want to alienate some people that really are conservative at heart. Either way, it is what it is. I think we've spent enough time on it, to be honest. I'm not a Tesla fanboy. The technology is great, but it's not rewriting anything. Maybe that's what it's supposed to do, but, it kind of leaves me lukewarm. I think, with the technology that's on hand, I think there's really capabilities to do something a bit more, out there, or, not even out there, but adventurous, perhaps a bit more, finding your own identity. I mean, this thing could look like anything. I mean, if you take the badge off, it's not really a Tesla, is it? Anyway.
Agree.
All right. it's not what, you know, I believe the brand's values are. That's all. But anyway, you know, moving on, I think the next car that has been very interesting, but is also not particularly to my liking, is the Porsche Cayenne Coupe. And everybody's building these things. You know, it's
horrible. Absolutely horrible.
I mean, the thing about that car is it needs to be in that space. It's like the buyers that are buying that vehicle are also buying, you know, the Q8, you know, the X6 and the GLE Coupe from Mercedes-Benz, which I think is my personal favorite of that lot. The Q8 is actually very nice as well, but they you know, the, it's not my type of car. So, you know, I don't think it's poorly done. You know, a lot of people have been like, well, it is great. I mean, if you talk specifically to the younger generation, there's quite a lot of people that grew up with SUVs and they think that's the default car. For me, you know, I had like Testarossa or a Porsche 959 on the wall. That to me is a car. So it's very different in terms of what it is that we like, you know. And so, you know, for the Cayenne, you know, I'm not a fan. I take it you're not either.
No, like, you know, this is the thing for me. Maybe I'm just a little bit old school with that, and you know, I'll let other people judge that. But like I mentioned this last time, or in the Geneva podcast, and I had a little bit of my rant about Aston. And you know, the quintessential thing was, it's like, you know, Aston is moving away from being this kind of cool James Bond style company to become, you know, just another sports car company. And I have a very similar feeling with Porsche. You know, I think I understand why they do these kind of coupes, and I understand why they do it from a market perspective. You know, that's not, I don't want to challenge that. From a design perspective, what this really annoys me, it's just not well done. I mean, if you look into those kind of pictures in particular, A, the front is terrible. I mean, you know, what happens up there? Grill. Hey, come on, guys, you can do that much better. You know, this is a joke. And from the rear perspective, when that mirror, that wing comes out, this looks like a freaking Hot Wheels car. I mean, this is something that I think, you know, again, like the Tesla maybe, was quite rushed after the success of like a, you know, Mercedes GLE or an X7 BMW, where they say, oh, you know, we have to jump onto that. But it's just not well thought through. And I think you can see that nowadays in terms of design in particular. Especially when I compare it to an Audi Q8 that you just mentioned. You know, the Audi Q8 looks much better than this. We see it, especially the Q8, quite regularly here in Munich. You know, and every time I see it, depending a little bit on the color, I saw one in an ugly brown the other day, which was terrible. But, you know, when you see them in a silver or like a blue or something like that, the Audi Q8 looks actually really good. And if I would have the choice, I would choose the A8, you know, sorry, the Q8. You know, 10 times over that Porsche. For me, you know, if you want to have a Porsche, buy a 911. If you want to have a family car, don't buy a Cayenne, buy something different. I don't know. It's just, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, I understand why it's there, but I don't think it's well executed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, the whole reason that Porsche is still alive is because of the Cayenne. And you know, so it does, you know, sales are important. And the fact that people are buying these things and, you know, they're considering them as their family car just means that the company's taking a turn. Like, unfortunately, you know, I like you, would have liked to just see a 911, but the company wouldn't be around today if that was the case. So it seems like we've started off on a kind of sour note. Both of these new cars that have been unveiled recently, we don't like, you know, for various reasons, but mostly because we don't like that typology. Now, you know, it might be a personal thing as well, but I think we should move on into something that's perhaps a bit more positive in terms of what's been shown in recent times. And that brings us to number three, which was the Ferrari P80C. And normally we always talk about production cars, but this is one, it's a Ferrari, so, you know, we got to talk about it, right? But also, it's a very, you know, limited one, I mean, it's limited. It's like there's one of them, you know, that's it. And so it brings us back to something that we discussed in a very early podcast, which was these one-offs. And that is very much the direction that these super high-end companies are going. And, you know, we got another one to discuss after that. But this, like, bespoke, in this case, special projects vehicle for a man known only as TK in Hong Kong. And, you know, it's a racing car. And in the end, you know, we don't really have to like it because only he does. So what's your thoughts on that?
I like it.
what I
don't like is the rear wing. And Flavio Manzoni, I think, said in an interview that was released. I think you released that actually. I watched it on your
site. Can find it on Formtrend.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
And he said you can actually remove the wing to make like the pure aesthetics out of the car. And when I imagine that, yes, then I would very, very much like that car.
I remember he said it was for the Concorso d'Eleganza when you display the car.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, I think, you know, there's some bits and pieces that I don't necessarily like. I think a little bit of the front, you know, is very racy. Of course, that's what the car is made for. I think if they would make a production version of something like that on a, you know, selling it to more people than just one person, they would solve that probably a bit differently. But, I mean, you know, we both know Flavio Manzoni a little bit, and It's the kind of perfect car also for, you know, for him or from him. You know, it's very sensual. You know, he likes to play with surfaces. He's very much into, you know, working a lot with the surfaces. And this is an epitome of that. I think very, very much so. And I like it. I like the direction that Ferrari is going into. You know, as long-term listeners know, I'm a little bit more of a simple kind of shape and, you know, playing with surfaces kind of type. Of guy, and I like that. That's pretty cool. It has, you know, massive wheels on it as well, so that's pretty cool as well. but yeah, it has something that is, you know, something that is just cool. You know, that would be a car. Especially there's this one picture where it just stands in the pit lane. That would be a car where it's like, yeah, if I would be like, you know, 9, 10 years old, I would probably put that on my wall.
Yes, probably. I mean, you know, talking about sensual surfaces, it's like the renderings that are by Stefano Di Simone are absolutely amazing of that car. But, you know, the actual creation, you know, it does kind of, you know, stay on the same lines, I suppose. But then, you know, you've got all of these carbon fiber addendum and like this huge wing. And, you know, it's like all of these race car bits that I guess are cool, you know, but it just, I don't know, it just detracts from the purity of the form, I think, a bit, and a bit too much, especially, you know, when you look into the rear diffuser, what's going on over there, it's like, wow, that thing is super complex and super technical. But again, it's kind of like, you know, kids love the Transformers and stuff, right? I mean, that's kind of like what this is doing. It's like, you know, again, it's like a nice sensual surface, really nice volumes and pure volumes in some areas that are mixed. It's almost like there's two pieces to that car. You know, there's the undercarriage, the hard, like, you know, technical bits that are kind of protruding through this sensual form over it. And it's really, it's interesting. You know, and again, it doesn't really matter what we think, because this guy that commissioned it is all about that. But, you know, at the same time, I do see bits of, you know, the 330, P3, P4, I mean, you know, the 250 LM. There's little bits of that, which is what, you know, initially, intentionally, he commissioned. So that's, you know, the brief that they were working towards. And I mean, you know, it's not the first special project. Won't be the last. If anything, we're going to see a whole lot more of them. And no one knows how much this car costs, but hey, this is one hell of a business model.
Who cares how much it costs? If you have the money, man, go for it. Like, you know, bless you, man. If you can go just a Ferrari, and you know, obviously they will not do that for everyone. So you can have as much money as you want to, but I think you need to have a certain amount of Ferraris, or you know, special edition Ferraris and stuff like that. But man, if you can afford it, you know, why not? Go ahead.
Yep. No, you'll definitely need to own a few Ferraris and be a very faithful customer in order to get your hands on something bespoke from the brand, which is great, you know. So moving on into the next, and I think the final car that we'll cover that's been revealed since, that we've seen revealed since Geneva, and that would have been the DBS, the DBS GT Zagato, which was basically conceived to celebrate the collaboration between Zagato and the brand. And I think that we were talking about this, why there is only 19 of them, but it's interesting that they decided to offer this car as part of a package, which is bringing the original kind of DB4 GT Zagato back to life as well, and it's part of this DBZ centenary package, and that's really cool. I think
I love that DB4 GT, and I think this thing alone is worth 8.3 million euros. That is in terms of, because they come as a package, one has to say. So you cannot just pay either or. You know, you pay for both or you get nothing. About that, you know, obviously that came about, like, you know, Zagato turns 100 years this year. So it's more like an anniversary present, I think, for them as well. I don't like the DBS. I think that's my problem about the whole thing. And the renderings, we've only seen renderings so far. I think this is what we have to mention here, is the fundamental thing about this. But
Yeah.
They don't change the front about it. It still looks like a freaking whale shark and it wants to eat you. We all know that Zagato will bring some cool flavor, you know, and flair into this whole thing. But to be honest, give me that DB4 GT any day. Yeah, that's the car that I would go for, that one. That's the kind of, you know, Aston Martin that that I think is still the kind of top level alongside the DB5. I don't know. DBS, not a great car for me personally, as you know, you obviously all know. And I don't think Zagato will save it, to be honest. You know, maybe they should have taken another one. So,
I think it's great. Like you mentioned, we've only seen rendering so far. So of course, the renderings would have been exaggerated, the wheel size, you know. But that dash to axle is incredible on that car. So if they can come anywhere close to that, I mean, that is a premium proportion if I've ever seen one. Obviously, the purity of the DB4, you know, the GT Zagato, and that was their cold spot. I mean, that was Zagato's heyday in the 60s. You know, that was when, you know, they were just, I mean, all Italian design houses were just knocking it out of the park during that period. Zagato was one of them. Mm. And Ercole Spada, who actually recently was speaking in Torino, if I'm not mistaken, because he was there to celebrate Zagato's centenary, as you mentioned, the brand's, you know, anniversary and turning 100 years old this year. And, you know, again, the new DBS GT, I mean, Zagato's, you know, got a new design director who's always new. I mean, he's been there for a very long time, but Zagato's design director, Norihiko Harada, is extremely eccentric. He's a really cool guy. But, you know, some of this work that he does has a very Japanese flavor, and it's not really, like, shown too much in this car, but I do like certain bits. And again, you know, it's really important to say we're looking at a rendering of this future vehicle, so there isn't all that much to go on. But I like, you know, what Zagato's done with the rear end of that car, in particular the tail lights and things. In the past, where Zagato's been involved, it's been some really, really cool stuff. They had a show here in Hyde Park for Aston Martin's centenary celebration a few years ago, which you know, article also on my website about that, which was super great. It was a fantastic event. There was a whole lot of cars, and And yeah, I mean, I think Zagato does a good job for Aston Martin. I also like where Aston Martin is going. I mean, I know that, you know, for you, it's not a 007 car, and therefore you're not, like, you know, all that enthusiastic about it. I am quite enthusiastic. I think it's, you know, in terms of moving the car into this really luxury slash sport oriented direction is super, super cool. But yeah, I think we should move on into our main topic, and this is actually a good segue, unless you have something to add.
Yeah. Just one more thing. Aston Martin. If anybody of Aston Martin is looking for that for $8 million, can I please change that, you know, weird DBS thing and get a DB10? Thank you. That would be nice.
Well, yeah.
Not that I can afford it. Yeah, that's the.
And
that's
you're
the
also thing, talking but... euros. It's a bit cheaper in the pound side.
Yeah, it's 6 million pounds. £6 million, obviously, absolute bargain. Yeah,
yes, so absolute bargain.
You know, let's right. Absolute bargain. So let's get it going. But let's talk about.
I think this
topic.
Is a very, very good segue now into Brexit. I mean, we're talking currencies. You're talking euro. I'm talking pound because this is where I live. And there's also a huge issue right now, which is Brexit. And, you know, we're not a political show. We're not going to talk politics too much, but we are going to talk about how Brexit is affecting the automotive design climate. And, you know, in particular, the studios and the automakers that are here in the UK and what it kind of represents for our main job and, you know, finding people to come into these studios, work in these studios from a contracting perspective, also from a permanent perspective. And yeah, let's just jump right in.
Yeah. And to start things off with, I think what we should do, because, you know, things change very quickly at the moment. It's the 27th of March, 2019. It's 6:15 GMT, which is Greenwich Mean Time. So we're recording this at this moment now. So if something happens in the next hour or so, do not blame us for any kind of big changes. We don't expect it, of course, but just to kind of, you know, put this out there, because so many things have changed over the past few days.
Over the last, couple of days.
On this topic. But I think in general, this is the reason why we wanted to talk about this, I think, to show to a certain kind of degree also how volatile, but also how stable the car design industry can be and at the same time also is. Yeah, this, I think, from our perspective, what we will try to do is we will be as little political as possible. Yeah, so we don't want to take any stands here for, you know, why the Brexit is good, why Brexit is bad, or whatsoever. I think, you know, we're all old enough to have our own opinion about that. And if you really want to know in detail what we think, send us a message. But it's more about analyzing what does this mean. Of course, there will come in some of the opinions that we have into that kind of analysis, but we will try to make it as neutral as possible. So, you know, if you are in either position, please do not hold it against us. We try to be as neutral and objective as possible on this topic, because it is a little bit of a hot piece of cake.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, you can tell from my accent which side I'm kind of leaning towards. But again, you know, we're not going to I'm not going to let that sway my discourse here, because basically what we want to discuss is how this is affecting people. And I mean, I'm on the phone with people, you know, trying to get them into companies that we're working with here, as well as in the US and in Europe. And, you know, the issue that is constantly arising when I mention some roles that are happening here in the UK is, you know, the uncertainty about this entire, like, Brexit situation. I mean, I had somebody write me the other day being like, hey, you know, I don't have a work visa. And, you know, he was a German national, and you don't need one yet. You know, I mean, in 2020, December 2020 is when it's supposedly going to actually kick in. But for the moment, we're okay. You know, but I think what we want to talk about is kind of a bigger overview, and that, you know, when companies are looking to hire in people. Some are, even some HR departments aren't even that clued in as to what it is that is really happening. No one's really knows what is happening. And it's really like, that's the main issue here. But I think if we just look at it from an automotive, like, and a design centric, in terms of hiring and candidates and forming teams and, people to work within teams, there isn't, we're seeing a lot of things happening within the manufacturing side of things. So Nissan's canceled a couple of programs over in Sunderland, which is definitely going to impact that part of the UK without a doubt. There's been a lot of changes over at JLR. There's been, people are talking about, Tata selling off Jaguar. I mean, there's so much stuff happening right now due to what is happening in the political climate that we're in. At the same time, when you look at other design studios, there's still a lot of work. There's still a lot of things that are taking place and people are moving around. And I'm not saying it's necessarily business as usual, but you definitely need to take into account that London is a massively influential place to be. And when you're designing, whether you're in the fashion industry or the film industry or the tech industry or in the car industry, when you're working in these types of environments where, you really need that input because there's a lot, it's a huge car market, the UK, right? Second only to Germany. And so it's really important to get that feedback from and to have designers really infusing their products with things that people want. And I think the whole reason why Brexit kicked off in the first place was because the Brexiters wanted to stop so many people coming in, because it is a great place to be and to live. And but at the same time, they didn't want people to come in and to take away their resources, as it were. That's not the case now. But again, like I'm saying, people want to come here because it is very, very influential and it can inspire a lot of people. Let's not forget the Nissan Juke, the Nissan Qashqai, the runaway C-segment hit that is the default car across Europe, was conceived in Nissan's Design Europe, Nissan's London-based studio. So it's really, really important to get that creative input here.
Exactly.
And that's not going anywhere.
Exactly. And I think what we have to say as well in terms of Brexit, because design is an intellectual good or kind of gift or whatever you want to call it, these kind of what kind of affects manufacturing would of course be certain kind of extra taxes or customs, tolls, all these kind of things. In the first kind of instances, this would obviously have no effect on the design world, and in particular over the car design world. I think this is the positive news, which keeps the whole thing a little bit more stable. Of course, if you have to order certain kind of things from abroad, that might make it a little bit more expensive. But in general, the effect, financial effect on the car industry, or on the car design industry, will not be as big as maybe for other parts. Now, however, and this is always and I think this is what global car design has always been capable of doing, this will, of course, have an effect on the understanding of design. Yeah, because if Brexit would really happen in, let's say, a hard Brexit, and there's and the transition period would be stopped almost with immediate effect, you will have a very, very small theoretically amount of people within the UK, within the European Union system. Of course, the pool of people working in the area will only be marginally be smaller. Yeah, and I think this is at first the biggest impact that we all will feel in the UK side. Yeah, if Brexit happens, and if a Brexit would happen on like a hard Brexit, if we have a transition period, this effect would come a little bit later, but it would necessarily, of course, come, which pretty much means, the quest for talent, the quest for support and skill will rise exponentially. And in the UK, I think in the European Union, because, you can get people from all over the continent pretty much. It's not going to have that much of an effect, maybe in specific areas. But because obviously you have a smaller amount of people available, the good thing you could say potentially what's going to happen for the employees or for the contractors is that, wages can rise, hourly rates can rise, but at the same time, you're asking the fact how sustainable can this be? So the long-term effect might be that companies understand they might have to reduce their design staff because it's just not that many people available anymore. Now, Eric, you and I both know that within the educational system in the UK, Coventry has grown exponentially over the past few years. So they could maybe help out with that kind of side a little bit. But I think, to grab the culture and the intercultural exchange, this would for me be the biggest impact in a very short amount of time. I mean, just imagine, look at all the people that are now working at JLR, at Aston Martin, at McLaren, at Geely, Lotus, Dyson, wherever you want to. They come from all over Europe. They come from all over the world. And if you take that away, it also takes away a perspective of what is British nowadays. Yeah, I mean, best example would be. Just to put that out there, someone like Toby Zumann, chief exterior designer of Aston Martin, is a German guy. What happens if it wouldn't be that easy for him to come to the UK anymore and get a perspective on what Britishness means to an outsider, for example, in those particular cars as Aston Martins are. And I think this is an intellectual, from an intellectual side, a very big risk, yeah? Because if you look into the German companies in particular, I mean, look at BMW. Adrian van Hooydonk is a Dutch national who's running it. We have Amko Lennart, who works at Ford in Germany from a similar background. We had Anders Warming, head of Borgward and Mini, who's a Danish national. So all these companies thrive through this kind of international, appeal that they bring in, that the kind of people that they bring in. Same goes for China, of course, for that degree. So if that would be a bit of a problem, then, can they sustain the same quality, or can they even, improve their quality? And this is kind of the big question for me about Brexit, in terms of just car design as the intellectual point.
Yeah, I mean, all valid points. We've seen quite a lot of design directors coming in from different nationalities than the car companies that they are working for represent. But I think, those people will always exist. It's just a question of, can you get in some younger designers that are, not even younger, but like senior designers, but, people that aren't quite at that level, because there will always be, people that are willing to sponsor visas and get people over. And it's just going to make things a whole lot more difficult. And, I think, it's without an open border, it's going to basically be kind of like, the U.S. situation, which I'm also dealing with as well when I'm working with Europeans or U.K. nationals and, trying to get them over there without, valid visa or work permit, or, you're unable to move about freely. And that's the nature of the world. People can't up and move. But what does that mean? Then it just makes hiring a very qualified candidate from overseas or, across borders that much harder. And sometimes, they're not willing to the hiring managers aren't willing to really, not only on the expenditure side, but on the time side as well, because all these things take time, right? To get people into the studio. And so they'll look for someone that is local, perhaps, and then perhaps, their quality level might suffer. Certainly the level of diversity that's available within the studio that is important in a design, as part of a design team, I think, would suffer. So there's lots of things that are playing around right now. And, again, like we said in the beginning, this is a developing story, More news tonight at 5. It's like there's so much stuff going on that is, and it's changing like the weather over here. Because if anyone's never been to the UK, it's not always raining. It changes, the weather changes super rapidly because we're this little island and, you know, the cloud cover comes and goes super quickly. But anyway, that basically is just right now we're under a cloud. We don't know what is going to happen. We're all trying, you know, hoping for the best and hoping that, you know, there can be a deal or there can be no Brexit or whatever. But from the design side of things, it's still at the moment, you know, business as usual. All of those companies that you mentioned, you know, there's some of them that are taking a little bit of a pause, you know, to reflect, to see, you know, do we have the right numbers? Do we need some other people? If so, like, you know, so there's a bit of a halt, I think, or definitely a slowing down of the hiring process during this tumultuous period in the political scene here. But I think, you know, in the short term anyway, we're not going to see any vast changes. People aren't going to be leaving. Design studios are not going to be closing. But you're right. I mean, there might be some downsizing. There might be some, you know, changes that are going to be taking place and as a result of this Brexit situation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we have to be also like reflecting some of the potentially positive sides on this side, because there's a lot of agencies in the UK, of course, as well. Yeah, and we're talking about creative agencies, of course. And for them then to trade again with Europe in particular might even become a little bit easier, you know, because, you know, we never know what's going to happen with the pound. So the pound could, of course, drop because of that. And in the good kind of cases, this would then mean that it would make the UK as a location to, you know, to place creative projects much more attractive just because of a currency exchange rate. Yeah. This sounds very from a speculation point of view, very strange to think about it that way, because of course there's completely, you know, a number of other effects based on that. So that means just usually if the currency falls down, you know, the costs go a little bit higher because inflation, you know, has a lot to do with that. But in general, this could increase trade with the continent. Yeah. And this could, of course, also mean that certain areas could grow quicker, or like, you know, could even grow where they weren't expected to grow. Yeah. I'm thinking about car design when it comes to more digital content side, UX and all these things. And that could be actually very interesting. Yeah, to see how and where this could go and in which kind of direction this could go. So, you know, it's not everything is bad when it comes to that kind of side. But obviously this is the problem, is we're talking about hypotheticals at the moment. And when it comes to Brexit, I think no matter what the outcome is, I mean, the whole thing has been such a mess already, is that the damage has already been done. I mean, you know, you mentioned Nissan earlier, you mentioned, you know, we can talk about Airbus, for example, which to a certain degree is, of course, affected, you know, in cooperation with the car design industry now with Audi and this kind of flying car system. And they've already mentioned that they can feel an effect on the negotiations that have happened at the moment. Yeah. And I think where we will really see a very strong effect is, of course, on the recruitment side. So to get good talent into that country, yeah, because from experience, and you mentioned this, obviously from the US side, you know, giving out visas is an absolute, you know, terrible process to go through. And I think the question always asked is that, you know, is that something that people are then willing to do? Whereas at the moment, they might not be thinking about it. Yeah. And I think this is the kind of luxury that we have at the moment, is we can say, hey, I can hire someone from Germany, I can hire someone from Spain, France, or wherever, and I don't have to think about these kind of things. And from a purely skill perspective on the company, you know, having this kind of intercultural exchange obviously improves the entire company, not just in the design team, for example. And This is where it's going to be interesting in all these kind of combinations is, you know, how do these companies think to compensate that? And the worst case, of course, it could mean that someone like Nissan is moving over to the continent again. I mean, they were in Munich before they went to London, and, you know, what would happen if they come back? That's the question, you know, if they want to have access to their talent.
Yes. No, definitely. I mean, a lot of these companies initially set up shop here, because, you know, from the sales perspective, right, it gave them access to the free market in Europe, allowed them to trade. But, you know, some companies like Toyota, for example, opted to set up in Belgium, in France. And also, they don't have to contend with this now. But it was just a decision that was made initially. And then, you know, obviously the design studios follow. So it's interesting times, certainly. I'm glad that you have a positive note to add within that. Right now, I have no idea what is happening. But I do know that right now it seems to be business as usual, and there is no great urgency or, some real issues and important issues, nothing to worry about, essentially. From a hiring perspective here in the UK, it's with new studios popping up, a lot of development work happening. You mentioned a few. There's lots of things that are happening here in the UK, and it's all super interesting. There is a lot of know-how in this little island. A lot of manufacturing capability. A lot of just technology as well. There's lots of know-how, like I said. So it's really that is paramount, and that is going to really help push people through. Unless people, start leaving and going elsewhere because of the reason that you cited earlier, if the pound starts to drop, and it may not be all that entertaining to be here anymore. Not entertaining, but fulfilling from a financial perspective. But again, that's not, I don't think, happening. And it's hard to conceive that, this fine country is going to kind of become like, a Prague or, an East Germany or something. We're not going to go down that far. It'll probably take a little hit in the beginning. It's already, we've seen the pound is not what it was. It's still strong. We're still got a lot of, things to do over here and a lot of companies to feed. So, and a lot of things that are happening from within the design sector in particular. So yeah, good times.
Exactly. And no, I think, this is always the point. This is obviously such a troublesome kind of topic. I mean, when I look at my Facebook and I see people that go from both directions, and it's like, this is a great thing and this is a bad thing. And, obviously a lot of people are over exaggerating about everything that's going on around them. But the biggest problem one of the bigger problems, of course, is that the trust that all these kind of industries need from governments, from something like the European Union, will of course be really put to the test in that sense. And we can see that with the companies as well, like JLR is a good example. They're always calculating with the worst, and I think everybody involved in the car industry in particular, or let's say the transportation design industry, is one of the most important thought leaders in that kind of regard, is to say, of course this is a critical situation, and of course this is a very difficult situation, but at the same time, what can we do, all of us in this kind of community, to make it still worthwhile to push this kind of economy, and to push what we do? Because, the best kind of projects, we talked about Aston Martin before, Aston has been, you know, near death or almost at death multiple times. But, you know, there's always, you know, there was always kind of some trouble in that company, but they've always managed to do good products because the people that were working in there were pushing, you know, to deliver good products. And I think this is something that we should always remember, is that if the UK leaves the European Union, of course, there will be, you know, a number of changes. There will be a number of, you know, situations that might be better off or that might be worse off. But it's always the situations. What are you doing out of, you know, with that situation? What is the personal kind of, you know, development from that you can learn from in that sense? And the same goes for the European Union. I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, some people will be very, very upset if they cannot be working with UK nationals anymore, or, you know, if there would be any kind of work permit issues and stuff like that. I mean, you know, we cannot just only look down the UK road from that. But in the end, it always comes down to what we deal with it. Yeah. Of course, there's a bunch of politicians involved and they are doing, no matter what kind of side you are, on a miserable job to deliver that, in particular in the UK, I believe. But it always comes down to ourselves, you know, in our own efforts and stuff like that. And, you know, companies such as Aston or, like, you know, JLR, of course, there will be a hit for them, you know, and of course this will hurt. And there will be some people that think they might not have, you know, they should have not been hit by these kind of decisions or by these kind of changes. They will be very angry, but at the same time, it's, you know, we have to keep on going. And if we can learn one thing from design in particular, you know, if you deliver a great product, if you create a great product, you know, there will always be a reason to survive. And you mentioned Porsche, you know, they've shown that as well. They went, you know, they obviously had some issues, but they went on to continue. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, whatever happens with the Brexit situation, these companies, not all of them will survive, I think, in the long term, because that's just how it goes. But, you know, most of them will find their own little niches. And that's something that the UK has always been great at, is like finding your little niche. Just look into a Morgan, you know, for example, look into Aston, for example. Yeah, look into McLaren, to find your little niche to actually survive no matter what happens around you. Yeah. And I think this is the most important thing. And this is what we want to bring across as well, is that, yes, of course, and we're not going to lie, Brexit will have some influence on everyday life on both sides of the channels. And those will be more towards a negative side rather than a positive side. But it's still down to every single one within our community and our industry to make the best out of it. You know, what I've learned personally is, if you complain about it and you don't do anything about it, then you deserve to go down. You know, if you do everything you can, you will survive in most cases. So this is, you know, this is what we should take from the whole Brexit idea. And ideally, let's be hopeful for everybody involved. And maybe that's a little bit of a political statement. You know, if we can all stick together, and if we can maybe all stay within the same kind of system, you know, this podcast might have been completely useless in about, like, you know, 3 months' time. We never know.
This is wishful thinking. So anyway, okay. Well, no, great. I appreciate that. I mean, it's, you know, I don't have much more to add. I think we've said everything that we can at this point. You know, it's it is a developing, you know, situation. You know, we will keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. And, you know, like you said, we'll just ride it out and do the best that we can with what we've got. And, you know, that said, I think that should bring us into our next phase of this podcast, which is what we've got to look forward to. And, you know, you and I are going to be going to Shanghai in a couple weeks' time, and that, yes, is a very, very important show, because the largest car market in the world as well, and a lot of brands are over there, and a lot of brands are doing some really, really cool stuff. You know, I just recently, you know, just to kind of conclude the Brexit or the Britain aspect of this, you know, I heard this week, or was it late last week, that you know, JLR finally won their copycat kind of, you know, copyright infringement lawsuit against Landwind for their blatant plagiarization of, mm-hmm, the of the land, wind, you know, I mean, come on, land, wind, like you can't even come up with an original name. Anyway, and so it's like, it was crazy because that car was exactly what the Evoque was, and it was running around for like half the price available in China. So there's no great surprise that, you know, Jaguar is not doing very well, or not Jaguar rather, but JLR. And, you know, we're talking Land Rover right now and the Range Rover Evoque in particular. You know, if you can buy a product and you're a Chinese customer and you're like, yeah, I kind of want that, but it costs half the price, it's kind of hard to justify spending, you know, spending the full amount on a on an original product. You know, I mean, that's goes for a lot of things, Louis Vuitton bags, for example. But anyway, I'm kind of digressing. Anyway, I was really happy to see that JLR finally won that case. It's a shame because it might be a bit too late in terms of, you know, sales within China, because Jaguar and Land Rover are not particularly successful in that market, which is a shame. And it's because of things like this. You know, you think, yeah, you know, copy and pasting, you know, it's not going to affect anyone. It's going to make me some money. Well, it has affected, quite negatively impacted, JLR as a whole. But anyway, on to bigger and better things. Now, the thing that it's interesting, and this is kind of a Detroit Auto Show LA scenario again. But it's not in the same country, so it's a bit different. That being, the Shanghai Auto Show, which you and I will be going to, is actually going to be held at the same time as the New York Auto Show. And if, you know, regular listeners will, you know, people that know me will know that I'm actually originally from New York and I love the city. And I remember that auto show, you know, jumping in and out of cars with my poor dad, my mom, you know, just like hanging around as I jumped into every single car at the show. And it's a great place, a great venue. And for the last few years, Hyundai has dominated there with the Genesis brand. And they're set to do it again this year.
Correct. And one has to say, of course, New York is also, from like, you know, new releases and stuff like that, much smaller than almost any other show in the world. This is really a lifestyle show in terms of car design. So that's why Genesis fits in quite nicely over there. And, you know, we spoke to some high-level officials over the past, I think, a year or so. It was why they have chosen New York. And, of course, it has to do that they're pretty much the only people. Yeah. So if we look actually into the Hyundai group itself, you know, there is the Hyundai Verve. There's a Kia concept, compact SUV that you've put onto the list. There's the Genesis one. So it's almost like, you know, a car show that is made for the Hyundai group in that sense. Obviously, there's a few other guys in there as well, but the most important ones are coming from the Hyundai group. So they are owning that show pretty much, which is good and bad, I think, at the same time, because, you know, they have everybody there. But with Shanghai being at the same time, pretty much, you never know if all the attention goes to that kind of show. Obviously, if they can come up with something similar as the Genesis Essentia from last year, well, let's say then they will grab that attention, of course. But if it's something going to be a bit more conventional, then it might be different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what they're showing, but I think it would make sense for them to kind of develop something a bit more, you know, roadworthy. Shall we say? And you know, I think for a luxury brand, you know, the sports car has been done now. I think, you know, and you know, sales of Genesis models, unfortunately, are not off. You know, they're not going through the roof. And it's a but in order to really stay relevant in today's market, you need an SUV, and it wouldn't surprise me one day if we saw an SUV of some form hitting Javits Center, you know, with a Genesis badge. They tried it before. They've done it before. That car was actually developed in California, and now we're ready to see another one. You know, but you're right. I mean, there is like the you know, a compact crossover called the Verve that's coming. There's another compact SUV from Kia, as well as a concept car from Kia, which I don't really know what to expect on that front. But yeah, it definitely seems the Koreans are going to be dominating this show this year. But if we look at some of the domestic brands, actually, just another foreign kind of car maker that's going to be there and grabbing some headlines is if Subaru shows off their new Outback, which they may or may not, I don't know. And I don't know if it's going to be column inches worthy, but Subaru sells actually quite well, in California and places like that, but in the over the Rust Belt, in places that you kind of need them, where there's some really severe kind of weather and things like that. I mean, you go to Colorado, it's like every car is a Subaru. If it's not a truck, it's a Subaru.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're quite good and in terms of quite strong over there. But the domestic manufacturers, so we're going to see the new Cadillac CT5, which up to now we've only actually seen pictures of, and it looks actually pretty cool. It's a new compact version of basically it's the what was it called, the CTS and the ATS. This is like a compact vehicle which is going to be unveiled. It's a new model, but it's basically a successor to the smaller ATS, and it's probably going to be a coupe as well, just like the ATS was. But I can't fault it. I mean, it's softer, and it's than Cadillac was under its quote unquote art and science design language when it first came out. But I think it's cool. It's got some interesting design elements, particularly around the C pillar kind of. I've only seen pictures. I haven't seen this car in real life, but it looks cool. It's kind of like this fastback thing going on, and I kind of like it. It's it's for a little Cadillac. It's going to be a 3 Series competitor. It should be quite interesting. Cadillac also had their marketing offices in New York for a little while, but it should. New York is where Cadillacs are sold, even though Detroit and things are trying to tell you that it's. It's the luxury product, and Lincoln as well. And there are another luxury brand that's going to be making a splash there in New York, and didn't show this. It's the new Corsair SUV, which is again, another midsize crossover or SUV, I should say, cause it's an MKC, I believe, successor. But when I first heard the name, I was like, wait, hold on. Lincoln Corvair. No, because the Corvair is a very, very different type of vehicle that some people may or may not know from the 1960s. It was a rear-mounted engine. It got a lot of negative press from this unsafe in any speed kind of thing, because it was generally well-received at launch, but then it was, basically they removed the front anti-sway bar, and this is a rear-engined, air-cooled car that was, like, at the time competing with the Volkswagen Beetle, and it had no stability. And they did that for cost-cutting reasons, and it ended up costing them a hell of a lot of money in lawsuits, but eventually led to the Camaro. Anyway, that aside, the Lincoln Corsair, not the Corvair, is a very, very different beast. And we will be seeing that in New York. So and that kind of sums it up for the headlines, I think, for New York Auto Show.
For the New York Auto Show. And obviously, as you mentioned already earlier, we will be in Shanghai for the Shanghai Auto 2019. We will be doing one of our lovely podcasts over there as well. And I think we shouldn't preview too much, just a bunch of cars, a couple of cars, something that we're looking forward actually to see over there. But what is always special about China or Chinese car shows, doesn't matter if it's Shanghai or Beijing or Guangzhou or whichever, you see a lot of Chinese car manufacturers over there that we have never heard of before. what we will try to do, of course, is to bring a little bit light into the shadow or into the shade of this absolutely massive car market. And so we will do that in the podcast. Yeah. So we will at the show. So we will talk about those in a little bit more detail. But I think in terms of interesting things that we can actually expect, The first one from our perspective would be to say, like, you know, the new Jetta brand. And yes, for all you American listeners and Chinese listeners, you are hearing correct. The Jetta brand is actually named after the Volkswagen Jetta, which is in China. And I think, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, but also in the US was a massively influential and important car, and in terms of sales numbers, also very, very high up. And they have now decided to make this an own China only brand from the Volkswagen group. So this is going to be interesting to see. They had their launch already, but we haven't, you know, we've seen the cars on pictures, but we're looking forward to see them. And of course, what is going to be really interesting to see, we've seen a lot of trailers on it, a lot of like advertisement already on it, are the Geely cars. Yeah, so Geely is coming out with a new generation, new design language at the moment. And we're going to be very interested to seeing those, because on pictures, loads of them actually look very, very good, I have to say. That's going to be interesting to see.
No, Geely's doing some great stuff. I mean, the Jetta brand is a good move, you know, from the VW group, from a branding perspective. I mean, it's really very well known. I mean, you know, it's known as basically, I think they're going to have three cars out there is what I've heard. So they're going to have not only the VW Sagitar that they have, which everybody kind of knows over there, but the new Jetta brand is obviously going to bring in different models as well. And I think they've got quite a few models planned, but at the moment they've got two SUVs that are coming from SEAT, and SEAT does not sell in China. So it's a kind of a great way to not only make use of something that Chinese customers are already well familiar with, it's a trusted kind of workhorse, and then all of a sudden this new brand that they know and love and, you know, they've grown up with is going to have a couple of SUV cousins that elsewhere in the world are badged SEAT, but over there will be called the new, will be under the new Jetta moniker. So it is going to be very interesting from that perspective. But yeah, Geely is going to be showing some amazing stuff, no doubt. We have seen some pictures trickle out. It's going to be really cool to see what it is that they're doing. I mean, I've heard there's going to be all sorts of stuff from a coupe to a crossover to an MPV, you know, everything like a sedan to an MPV kind of thing. They're going to have a whole lot of cars out there, and also it's not just Geely, right? I mean, Lincoln Co. is actually selling quite well in China. People tell me they see them all the time over there, and mm-hmm. we're going to see probably some good stuff in coming out of Lincoln Co. as well. And of course, you know, kind of bringing it back full circle, you know, of course, you know, I think we should mention also, you know, there are automakers that, again, you know, besides the domestic automakers that we're going to see there that are going to be unveiling some stuff, which we will share when we're there. But we know of a few things already from Audi, BMW, Buick, Citroën. A lot of cool things are going to be making their debuts over there. But, you know, the domestic brands are definitely going to reign supreme, and they're going to pull out all the stops. So expect some cool stuff from SAIC and Haval and, of course, Geely and Lincoln Co., as you mentioned. But bringing it back full circle, and again, another foreign automaker, is the Cayenne will be showing the coupe in Shanghai. Surprise, surprise. that's kind of the market it was conceived for, in my opinion, and it will definitely sell well over there without a doubt, because it's more of a lifestyle, like, you know, fashion accessory than an actual SUV, you know, workhorse or a sports car. So
exactly, and obviously we will see the very random and coming out of nowhere startup brands that will show, you know, a bunch of new cars and hoping for some more investment. So Shanghai has it all, including some good food, I have to say. Like, you know, Shanghai is always, you know, worth the travel as well. So that's going to be not just great in terms of the show, but also meeting a lot of people that we know. And if you are around at the show, let us know. Yeah, we will be around. If you want to get in touch with us, as always, send us a message on email Eric at on Instagram at formtrends. Me, you can message on email as well, and on Instagram at Concept House, and you know, any other kind of social media network, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever you can find, you can get in contact.
Yeah, we're on all of those.
Yeah, all day, every day, of course. And yeah, so
if
we will be trying to use Instagram in China as well, just to kind of a little bit of a disclaimer up front. Of course, with the troubles of Google in China, we are currently trying to figure something out in terms of how we can live stream the podcast. So stay tuned on our Instagram accounts and all these things to find out how we will actually stream the podcast live from the show. We have not made a final decision yet, but we will announce it as soon as we can, as soon as we know what is technically possible. If not, we will of course record it almost then, you know, upload it immediately for you guys to listen. But at the moment, we unfortunately cannot yet promise a video live version, or you know, definitely we can promise a recorded version on video, but we cannot promise yet a video live version because of Google tools being banned in China. I'm not quite sure if the VPN is strong enough to actually allow us to live stream. So we will see how we can do that and what we can do, but we will keep you posted as we are very much looking forward to Shanghai. It's going to be good fun.
Yes. If I can get my visa sorted in time, I'm looking forward to welcoming some people over. No, but it's funny how you don't really think about it, but everything is banned. So Facebook is banned as well. So Facebook, Instagram being part of Facebook, is also banned. Fortunately, we already have it on our phones, so it should work a treat. Accessing anything from China without a VPN that you're used to over here in the Western world is quite difficult. So anyway, we will do our best to share the way of communicating. So, just try to stay up to date. And yeah, like Martin said, if you want to get in touch, we're on various social media channels. We're all over, spread thick and thin all over the interwebs. So try to find us, send us a message, let us know if you're around. And we'll get in touch. Hopefully we'll see a bunch of people over there. I'm already planning on seeing a whole lot of people that I know that are living over there at the moment. So if you're one of those people and you want to say hello, ping us a line or get in touch on one of these social channels, and we will see you there.
We will see you there. And until then, enjoy, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast, of course. If you have any more questions, get in contact with us as always. And we will hear you very soon from the Shanghai Motor Show. And also we will release a special episode before the Shanghai Motor Show. So I'm not going to say too much about it. It's going to be pretty cool. I had a good fun talking to that person. So enjoy that.
Teaser,
yeah. So enjoy that. And you will hear us. And hopefully you will listen to us next time when we're live from Shanghai.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.